When Maestro Chailly picked up the telephone, he had just finished his first rehearsal for a Gershwin program with the jazz pianist Stefano Bollani. The program included a suite from Porgy and Bess, Rhapsody in Blue, and the Concerto in F, and he was full of excitement over it. For him, this was not only a continuation of his survey of 20th century classics, but a revisitation of his youthful enthusiasm for jazz, which he's explored recently in Shostakovich's music. He was especially enjoying his collaboration with Bollani. What's more, Leipzig has something of a tradition with Gershwin, going back to the communist era. During his tenure, Kurt Masur performed Gershwin and made recordings, still available on Berlin Classics, but initially issued on the GDR's state label Eterna, with a stern evaluation of the music as the soul of capitalist decadence, interesting mostly for historical reasons. Back then, Masur's classically rooted approach added its own valuable insight into Gershwin's attempts at a fusion of classical and jazz. I think we can expect something entirely different from Chailly's collaboration with Bollani.
And so that was for me the beginning of encountering a different universe of sound and style than classical music. And I think the combination with musicians like Stefano Bollani give me a possibility, you know, of working more also with fantasy in that sense, you know, how to conduct and approach the interpretation of great scores like the one of Gershwin this week. Well, let's hope we just started today, so we are in the complete full development of this project.
Of course, over many years now, you've done fabulous work making 20th century classics available, from Mahler to Berio, Zemlinsky, and other composers. And since you've been in Leipzig, you seem to be focusing on the classics more. Schumann, Mendelssohn, Beethoven, Brahms, and I understand you have some Bach recordings coming out.
Well, basically is exactly like this, but not the whole season. Let's say that when we record now with Decca, as you know, whom I am associated with for so long, as well as touring, the roots of the past of such a long life orchestra for almost 230 years of tradition, they are really forging the choices of repertoire. And in another sense, I have been doing this conducting this composer since the last 30 years. But I've been waiting to focus with such an intensity as in these years with the Gewandhaus Orchestra. So in a way, it's a very appropriate combination where I do concentrate more on the classic composers of the, especially the German tradition, which is, of course, a new chapter in my life, also through the documentation on record. Well, what I just told you about Gershwin proved that I am still very, very alive with the 20th century classics, of course.
Yes, that would be a pity if you gave that up.
I would not be able to give that up, yes. As I would not be able to do without contemporary music. I do conduct 2 to 3 world premiere pieces every season in Leipzig, which we commission every year. And I think this is also an important side of the interesting collaboration with the Gewandhaus Orchestra, which is extremely interested to know new languages of composing. This is a very important point, yeah.
Yes. Would you say the audiences and the organization are very much disposed to new music, or do they tend to be a bit conservative?
They do. They do, because the balance between the classical repertoire and the new repertoire is very, imbalanced. I do believe that contemporary music should be part of the main regular season in the right combination with other composers. And so it's not becoming a kind of sudden festival of avant-garde music, but is a kind of choice of distributing new pieces through the season. And that's very welcome, actually, by the public as much as by the orchestra.
Yes, I should think so. There are, of course, other orchestras over here and everywhere that struggle with the same problem, and people do seem to be most receptive when it's worked into the regular schedule.
Yes, sure. No, I think this is since 5 years already. I've been challenging the public very often with new music, with discovery concerts, where I do focus mainly on contemporary music, or let's say masters of the 20th century, and the public do like very much to be challenging that stuff, you know. So I would say it is working, yeah.
And I see that when you've been going into the classics, into Schumann, Mendelssohn, perhaps Beethoven, that you've been discovering new things there. You seem to have done quite a lot of research into unknown versions, texts.
Well, when I did leave the Concertgebouw Orchestra in Amsterdam after such a long period of 16 years, I took 1 year sabbatical before to take over the Gewandhaus, to immerse myself in reading and studying as much as I could about Mendelssohn and Schumann, and of course Bach and all the universe around the tradition of this orchestra. And I discovered that in Mendelssohn in particular existed possibility of alternative versions. And that was for me a very interesting discovery, to approach from new the universe of Mendelssohn with the most Mendelssohnian orchestra in the world. And I think that gave me and the orchestra a complete challenge for new sightseeing and thinking and rethinking in new ways the interpretation.
Yes, that seems very exciting. I haven't heard your recording of discoveries in Mendelssohn yet, but I'm very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, you will hear that even the Scottish Symphony not only has a different approach of interpretation from me, but there are unknown bars which for the first time have been recorded. So I think this is a very interesting aspect of discovering the genius music of Mendelssohn. And secondly, there is a new reconstructed third piano concerto, which is a beautiful piece, especially the first movement contains really a high-level music, not forgetting that was composed the same year of the famous violin concerto. So, unfortunately, the third movement was left out, so it has been reconstructed. But it's a very, very charming piece to discover.
He's really a misunderstood composer. This past summer, there was a very good local performance of Paulus.
Oh, yes.
That was his most famous work in the 19th century.
And, of course.
And now we know
it. It was the piece which brought his triumph in England when he first conducted in Birmingham. It was a kind of euphoric triumph of the British public, yeah.
So I heard you've also been looking into Mendelssohn's performances of Beethoven, and you've recently done a cycle of Beethoven symphonies.
That's right, yes. Well, in a way, we are bringing to Boston a complete Beethoven program with the fifth piano concerto with Louis Lortie and the seventh symphony. And if we are successful enough, we will get also an encore of Beethoven. And I think, in a way, this celebrate also this very major undertaking, which took us 3 seasons to fulfill, which is a complete cycle of the symphonies and the main overtures. Therefore, it was really an adventurous time. And as you know, Beethoven can be, as Maestro Gardiner says, conducting Beethoven means choosing living dangerously. And I agree with that more than ever. And especially if you try to take also the tempi, as we did in this approach, from the score of Beethoven, which are extreme, not unplayable, but almost unplayable, on the edge, let's say, of the limits of being playable, And there you see also the possibility of getting so near that approach by the knowledge and the how cultivated the Gewandhaus Orchestra is in the worlds of in the universe of Beethoven music. Well, as you know, the Fifth Concerto was one of the major things which took world premiere here in Leipzig. Yeah? So, I mean, the association of Beethoven in Beethoven's lifetime and this orchestra was pretty strong.
Very. That should be fascinating. So you'll be attempting the metronome markings in the Emperor as well as the Seventh.
Well, that is something that we have to see next week when Mr. Lortie will come. I'm curious to see what his tempo choice would be. Certainly in the symphony, yes. In the symphony, I am really to the point in that, and that brings also some different way of listening to the music. And to me, the speed change influences enormously the awareness of the form of the composition. And going back to Mendelssohn, when Mendelssohn more than one time conducted here in Leipzig the Beethoven symphonies, he was often criticized by his friend Robert Schumann to be too fast in his tempi. And the reply of Mendelssohn was very straight: I am just doing what is in the score. And I think, in a way, you need a lot of courage, strangely enough. To do what is in the score should not be something courageous. But in the case of Beethoven, you do need adrenaline to believe that this should be the way, because the influence of the whole movement will be tremendous.
Yes, and in terms of construction along with this, do you observe the repeats?
Yes, I do. I do in Beethoven, I do, yes. I think it's important also in the first movement or later movements that all the repeats are respected. I even did the Ninth Symphony, which, as you know, we play every year, the last 3 days of the year, since Maestro Nikisch from, I think, 1918. This was a never-interrupted tradition in Leipzig. And even in the Ninth, we do play in the scherzo, just in the last two seasons, we play the scherzo as it is written, with all the repeats, which can be exhausting, I tell you, because for the orchestra it's incredibly tough to play the scherzo as it is written. But it, of course, gives a different inside out and different feeling how you go through that movement, with so many possibility of feeling twice a long spot of the piece.
Yes, and I understand there'll be a series of recordings of these.
Yeah, there will be. Deck, I want to issue the whole thing, the complete symphony, in for the season 11, because now we have a triple appearance of Bach. It just came out these days, the Brandenburg Concertos. There will be the Samati Passion in March, April, and there will be the Christmas Oratorio for the Christmas period in December. So it's such a great triple bill project, of course, take the whole season, 2010, and Beethoven will be the center of the 2011 season.
You're also doing a Mahler cycle, is that right?
That's right. That's in May, to celebrate the centenary of his death. And we will make the whole symphonies, also with many major international guest orchestras and conductors, which represent Mahler in the world. So we are very proud of that, yeah.
Now,
you know that Mahler was 3 years Zweite Kapellmeister in the opera in Leipzig. He still exists, the apartment where he was living in the center of Leipzig. And he left by protest against Maestro Nikisch, which would not allow him to conduct enough repertoire, especially Wagner, as much as Mahler wanted. So many people don't know how strong Mahler association is also to be found here in Leipzig, knowing that in those 3 years he did start composing the first symphony, before he moved to Budapest. as a general intendant. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's a little bit forgotten there, but this is an important point, and therefore a Mahler festival in Leipzig makes for us a very special focus on the fact that he worked here extensively for three seasons.
I have heard recently your wonderful recording of Schumann symphonies in Mahler's arrangement.
Yes.
Does your interest in that particular project come from Schumann as a Saxon composer, or from your interest in Mahler?
Well, I think the combination of the two. We did also perform some overtures of Beethoven in the revision of Mahler, as well as we will play this season again the Symphony of Schumann because of the centenary year, and we will tour Europe with this major project in cities like Vienna, and Paris and London. I think it's important to focus on a composer which, together with Mendelssohn, was so crucial for the tradition of this orchestra.
Do you see using the Mahler arrangements as an experiment? Do you think you might return to the original scores eventually, or do you find the Mahler arrangements more satisfactory?
I do find it different, and it's certainly new for Leipzig. I will now do the complete cycle of symphony and concertos this season, and I still use the Mahler orchestration. But for the future, I will not say that these are obligatory. I think this brings to me, in particular, a great interest to focus on both composers, because I think that Mahler, in this great work he did for Schumann, he just tried to help more Schumann. It's not true that you hear Gustav Mahler in this orchestration. You just hear more Schumann. And the knowledge as an orchestrator from Mahler, of course, was more skillful than Schumann himself. So even when you cannot agree with what I'm saying, you can certainly say that it's a very interesting alternative. And today we should give a chance to the public to make a confrontation and to make a possibility of parallel to what is known already from the symphony itself. Yeah.
Yes, the recording is certainly very clear. And
he wanted to bring more clarity to the text, which sometimes is a bit foggy and difficult to understand, through his skill as an orchestrator, and I think Mahler succeeded indeed in getting more clarity. Even in the overture Manfred, which we will perform this year, you can see that there are so many corrections. Every symphony has, I mentioned in the booklet how many hundred corrections are. It's unbelievable how much work Mahler did on those scores.
Yes, he made some changes of dynamics as well. I suppose that's also in the interest of clarity.
Dynamic and also orchestration, yeah. He touched orchestration very often, yeah.
At this point, our listeners might like to hear just what the difference sounds like. First, you'll hear the last 30 to 35 bars of the first movement of Schumann's Second Symphony in Mahler's arrangement, played by the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra under Maestro Chailly. And second, as a Czech, you'll hear Schumann's original, played by Sir John Eliot Gardner, conducting the Orchestre Révolutionnaire Romantique, playing period instruments. Since you've been in Leipzig, it seems you're getting very deeply into the traditions and history of the orchestra. Is that something you've done in the past as you've come to a new venue?
I think I am very fascinated to give my time as a musician to an institution with such a long history. And when I went to Amsterdam, of course, I did develop my studies into the late Romantic tradition of Mahler and Bruckner, and of course also Richard Strauss and other composers of the time, also some Dutch composers of the time, like Diepenbrock or Wagenaar, etc. But I do think that you cannot ignore, and you should not ignore, what are the backbones of a tradition of an orchestra, also sound-wise. And you can see that composers like Beethoven, Brahms, Schumann, Mendelssohn has been forging the identity itself of this orchestra, sound-wise, I mean, the clarity, the transparency, even the darkness of the strings, color of the Gewandhaus is very, very personal-sounding orchestra.
Yes, that's a wonderful characteristic. Of course, it hasn't been easy to hear them until about 20 years ago. I remember first discovering them when Mazur's recordings in the 1970s
began to appear. Of course, before it was very, very difficult, exactly, yeah. Now we are touring also the States on the regular basis, and we are very proud to make a coast-to-coast tour now, starting from Los Angeles and ending up in New York. And so we are very happy with that, so that we can bring something of our own tradition into the States. We have been 2 years ago there with a splendid tour with Schumann and Mahler, I remember. And this was a very special trip at the time.
I'm very much looking forward to these that are coming up. I expect to be able to hear it both in Boston and
in Boston. Yeah, you're coming to the Boston con. You are in Boston, do you?
No, I live in Williamstown, which is almost equidistant between Boston and New York, so I can go to both places.
I see.
So I'll most definitely be in Carnegie Hall as well.
Very good, very good. Well, we are also very looking forward to the Boston Symphony Hall, because there's a kind of natural sound for this orchestra. The Gewandhaus is a splendid hall here, and has a kind of similar length of the sound in the hall. And therefore, for us, it's extremely natural to play in Boston.
Mm-hmm. And you're speaking of the new hall in Leipzig.
Yeah, the third. As you know, we had three different Gewandhaus halls. The first one is the one that Mendelssohn was working in. Then part of that during the war has been damaged, and now it doesn't exist anymore. The second one is the one legendary where Nikisch, Furtwängler, and Bruno Walter conducted. Those legendary combination of three great Gewandhaus Kapellmeisters. And then that was also bombed by the Second World War. And now we have the third Gewandhaus, built in 1982, which is a splendid hall, I have to say, yeah.
That's marvelous. I may be there in March or April, and I'm very much looking forward to hearing the orchestra in the hall.
Oh, please, yes, you should then hear the orchestra there. Is a kind of unique feeling. To hear it at home is somehow the best combination, of course.
Around that time, you'll be doing the St. John Passion of Bach.
Oh, yes. That would be great if you can come, yes.
So, in your work on Bach, is there a particular approach you're following that relates to the history of the orchestra? Are you taking Mendelssohn into consideration?
Well, Bach is the master of the masters, and of course, in the city where he composed all those masterpieces, like the Matthäus or Johannes Passion, you can imagine, or the Weihnachts Oratorium, is an almost obligatory choice. But I do study and conduct Bach since the last 20 years of my life anyway, even before I thought ever to be called in Leipzig. And Bach has been occupying my life in the last 20 years very, very intensively. So I am proud to develop my experience also here in Leipzig.
I'm very much looking forward to hearing those recordings and hopefully...
Yeah, I hope that you'll be surprised also by the Brandenburg Concertos. They will be appearing very soon in the States.
I have that on my my list. Are you using a chamber group or a larger orchestra?
For Bach, you mean?
For Bach, for the... Bach.
Yeah, let's say chamber music-like, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not extremely small, but it's not certainly large, no.
Now, absolutely. Your beginnings were in opera, and you continue to work in that area. This year, what...
Very, very, very little. I did one opera every year in La Scala in the last 4 years, and after that experience, I am very happy now to concentrate more on symphonic music. And opera nowadays is a very rare thing. I do it maybe in 2-3 years' time again, but not in the near future, let's say.
I see. That is just because you're so absorbed in symphonic music?
Yes, I cannot do everything, of course. And I'm happy to concentrate more on the symphonic music now in this period, yeah.
I know some conductors are getting rather frustrated with the amount of time that's taken up with the production, that some of the singers end up spending more time with the stage director than the conductor.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but I mean, the opera is, of course, a compromise. It should always be, has always been like this. Therefore, if you do like to do opera, you have to be prepared that you have to divide your ideas with the producer and also... up to a certain extent also to the choice of interpretation with the singers, yeah.
Are you still as interested in Rossini as you were? I see you've done some concerts with little-known pieces of...
Well, Rossini is certainly a composer which will always remain in my heart as much as Giacomo Puccini. But in this period I have not so much plans to do that. We did perform 2 years ago here with great success the Messa Solenne of Rossini, which is the orchestral version of the Petite Messe Solennelle, with great success, I have to say. But not in these days, yeah.
Any other particular projects beyond the Mahler and
arranged? I would say at the moment will be the 2010 Schumann in the complete concertos and symphony. 2011 would be Mahler, basically, leading the season. And 2012, we will have a Brahms cycle with concerti and symphonies again. So those are very big projects around these giants. So certainly will take a lot of energy from me and the orchestra, for sure.
Yes, I see your recordings of the two Brahms piano concerti with Nelson Freire.
Yeah.
They've gotten rave reviews. It seems to have been a revelation for many people.
Well, it was a great partnership with Nelson, and the orchestra showed all the beauty and the know-how of this long-lasting repertoire. So, no, I'm particularly proud of those concerti, also because the sound of Decca reproduce exactly the beauty of the whole sound, what the Gewandhaus sound like live, you know? And this is absolutely a great plus for that recording.
I see you've been very loyal to Decca over the years, and they've really produced extraordinary results for you. I don't think I've heard a bad recording from Decca, but the ones that made with you are extraordinary. Are you particularly interested in working with the engineers and producing a particular effect?
Well, there are people whom I've been working for almost 30 years now, and that makes this combination absolutely stunning, you know, and they know the whole so well. So in that sense, I'm very at ease now to record in Leipzig with the team of Decca. And hopefully it sounds like the understanding is tremendous, and also the sound beauty is terrific. So this is all to get, we try to get always the best recording, yeah.
With Brahms, are you at all interested in some of the work that's been done recently using, well, as Gardner and McCarris have done, working with smaller orchestras? And,
not really, no. I think I am in that sense really linked to the tradition of Brahms here with the orchestra, and I do not reduce forces. Certainly I would not double the woodwinds, that I don't do, but in the original orchestration I keep the normal symphonic bezetzum from 16 first violins down to 8 contrabasses.
Certainly from what I've heard of the Brahms recordings, there's no lack of clarity.
Yeah. No, I don't think so, yeah. I mean, the orchestration of Brahms is so perfect that there is no danger of that.
Thank you so much, maestro.
Thanks to you. All the best.
All the best.
Bye-bye.
Bye.